Hey, Drew.
Hey, John.
Hey, have you ever seen any of those movies where, like, somebody predicts that the world's going to end? You know, there's like a meteorite or something that's coming toward the Earth, or like a tidal wave or something. And everybody kind of like freaks out, and they're all like, what are we going to do? The world's going to end. Yeah.
Yeah.
Watch this. What are we going to do? The world's going to end.
What?
I'm Drew.
And I'm John.
And you're listening to The Hourchive,
our ever-growing library of everything, 1 hour at a time. I like this. You're reading from your little book over there.
I've got a little book. I took notes in the book. Look, you can hear the page turning.
It's like an old-fashioned story time. Sit right back and you'll hear a tale.
I read up on the subject.
A tale of doom.
I read up on doomsdays. Doomsday, end of the world. Armageddon. Apocalypse.
The rapture.
Yeah, man. You know there's a term for the study of this subject.
Armageddon-apology?
No. No.
Armageddon apology.
Sorry.
World's ending, sorry.
No, it's eschatology.
Oh, that's
the study.
I'm very disappointed by
that's what it is. It's eschatology. It's the study of the final events of history, ultimate destiny of humanity, commonly referred to as the world to come. Often refers not to the end of existence, but rather the end of life as we know or understand it. So there's two definitions there of doomsday, of end of the world, the end times.
El apocalipto.
There's a definition of like we all die.
Right.
Everybody. Right. And then there's the definition of not everybody dies, but life as we know it changes.
Sort of like when Night Court went off the air and everything was different.
Yeah, then. Everything changed.
It's just not a...
Yeah.
Not for the better.
That's a good point.
Not for the better. I mean, you could argue that that was the end of the world right there.
It was a sad day for everybody. It's a big topic right now, obviously.
Why is it?
Dumb year that everybody's been talking about.
2012.
Everybody thinks
the year the Mayans come back from Barbados.
Get their calendar.
Oh, the calendar.
They left it here.
Yeah.
You ever seen it? You ever looked at it?
No.
Like, you ever seen a picture of it?
No.
It doesn't look like
anything. I don't subscribe to any magazines with calendars in them, so I don't
It's like a circle. It's like a disc.
Oh.
I can't. There are no numbers on it, so I don't know what.
So how's
it doesn't say 2012 on there anywhere?
Yeah,
as far as I know,
weren't the Mayans like? Didn't they predate numbers and predate years?
Is that like predating a check?
Yeah, sort of.
I don't know what you mean. Are you saying they're
no?
Early?
I guess that wouldn't. That's not right. I was thinking like the timing of their civilization.
Oh.
Does not coincide with a time at which numbers and calendars were as we understand them.
Well, the whole Mayan calendar thing has been debunked by Mayan historians. And they, what do they say? They say it's not the end of time that is on this calendar. It's just the end of a cycle.
Right.
I think.
So it's end of one and just the beginning of another.
Yeah, exactly.
The Mayans, they're going to be born
again.
Again,
yeah.
Right.
They're
going to rise. They're going to build temples.
Cool.
They're going to slaughter people. Mm. They're gonna sacrifice us to the aliens.
Okay. I'm glad they made it.
They're gonna sacrifice us to the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
Ooh.
Indiana Jones is gonna. Indiana Jones is going to survive a nuclear attack in a refrigerator. And spoiler alert. And he's going to...
Yeah.
His kid's going to be annoying.
2012 is the doomsday that everyone's talking about right now. But there are many doomsdays, John, and I looked them up. And there are some cool ones. I will tell you about them. Oh. I want to get your reaction on some of these because there are some cool ones.
Tell me about some doomsdays. Drop some doomsdays on me.
This one isn't so much cool as it is... imminent. It will happen.
Oh, okay. This one's not very cool, but I guess we should talk about it because it's right behind you.
The sun will become a red giant in 5 billion years.
From now or from when it was first?
I think from now.
From now.
I think we got 5 billion years, okay. And then our sun, also known as Sol, is going to become a red giant. And what that means, it's not going to go nova at that point.
Right.
That's, that'll happen, but the red giant just means it's going to get, I think it's going to get bigger.
Uh-huh.
And the sort of perimeter around it, or the heat, coming from it will expand. So Earth will become unlivable because we'll be too close.
It'll be super hot.
Yeah,
super we'll hot. Be like Venus
is
right now,
yeah,
which is not great in the summer.
Right.
Not so bad in the winter, but not great in the summer.
Summer,
So we're gonna need to spend our summers like on Mars or Jupiter.
Yeah. We probably want to go further than Mars.
Maybe.
Go to Saturn.
Saturn.
Yeah.
It's got the rings. Yeah. Now, at what point after it becomes a red giant does it become a green giant? Because I want to know when I could start getting like free corn and green beans and stuff out of the sun.
You'd have to ask a real scientist.
Okay.
I don't have those answers for you.
Carl Sagan.
So that's the doomsday that's going to happen.
Eventually.
No questions asked.
Five billion years, give or take.
Yeah, sorry. That one's happening.
Now, that was sort of the premise of that, the one, I haven't seen it, but that one Danny Boyle movie.
Sunshine.
Isn't that what happens?
Yeah. Well, Sunshine, I think it was, I can't remember if that was Red Giant or if it was going nova. And the weird thing was...
What's the distinction between a red giant and a nova?
A supernova is when the star collapses sort of in on itself, I believe. Like, it expands to a huge size, and then it just collapses, and I think...
Like when you're microwaving a peep.
Yeah.
Those marshmallow peeps. Exactly. It gets really big, and then it just folds in on itself.
I think it leaves behind a black hole.
Or peep?
Can.
Yeah. At least find a big black hole inside your microwave.
But I can't remember in Sunshine whether it was a supernova event or if it was the red giant event. But the weird thing about it was it wasn't like that far in the future. Mm. And so like it certainly wasn't 5 billion years.
Well,
or
5 billion years, give or take, can mean a lot of things.
True. Like for some reason that process, I guess, had been... had come sooner than they expected. But yeah, the premise is that this crew on a spaceship is going to tell the sun to stop it. Hmm. Knock it off.
Hey, cool it.
Yep. That was an interesting movie.
I'd like to see it. I love Danny Boyle.
I didn't love it.
Yeah.
But it was a good watch.
Yeah.
Strange. Very, very sci-fi.
Okay.
Like in the true nature of sci-fi, I think.
In that it was science fiction.
Well, in that it wasn't, nowadays, I know this is off topic, but nowadays science fiction seems to be all, special effects and stuff like that, and very action oriented. And this was felt more like true science fiction to me, which is more like philosophy melded with
meditations
science
on
exactly.
Science. Okay.
So anyway, that's the one that's going to happen. The Sunshine premise will happen.
Scenario.
Yeah.
Okay. Bring it on.
There are a few we don't know. People think they might happen. One of my favorites that I read about was in Buddhism. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to probably get this wrong, but...
The sun comes out of Buddha's stomach, and it's a red giant.
The way that the human race has sort of come to be what they are, is according to Buddhism, is the first humans lived for like 80,000 years because they were something like they're not unskilled at anything. Hmm. They take no unskilled actions and they are virtuous.
Okay.
That's how I read it. But just
slightly removed from the current generation.
Well, yeah, exactly. Humanity. As humanity became unvirtuous and unskilled, the lifespan shortened.
Watch it, Buddha.
Yeah. The lifespan shortened to what it is now, about 100 years.
Okay.
80 to 100 years.
Down from 80,000 years.
So eventually what's going to happen is something called sword interval. Sword interval.
Sword interval.
When this happens, swords will appear in the hands of all human beings. And they will hunt one another like game. Some people will hide in the wilderness while this happens. And avoid all of the killing, right?
Sure.
After the slaughter is over, those people come out of hiding. They'll take up a life of skillful and virtuous action once again. And over time, the human lifespan will increase to 80,000 years.
So we're just going to bounce back
and here's,
after we sprout swords.
Yeah.
They're just going to appear in our hands.
A side note, and I don't know why this was in there, but when you live to 80,000 years, you reach sexual maturity at 500.
Oh.
So.
Huh.
Puberty sucks.
Well, that's, man, yeah, I'm thinking if that's, well, is the, wait, is that peak, like sexual peak, or
no,
is
no,
that,
no.
That's
you're,
just
you
maturity?
Maturity, yeah.
Okay, okay. I was confused because I was thinking like, man, that sucks. Because then you've got like 79,000 years of decline. That's not
no,
any
no.
fun.
You got 79,000 years of like getting better.
Wow. Okay.
Sword interval.
Sword interval.
Everybody gets a sword.
Huh.
And then you fight.
It sounds like a Nickelodeon show.
You're
like a game show. Like there's like a there's like a giant puppet Buddha that. Oh, no, 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 it's Harvey. It's Harvey from Double Dare.
Oh,
and he's just like,
wait.
Time for sword interval. Everybody get your swords.
I wonder if that was, that could have been a
physical challenge.
Physical challenge on Double Dare.
You are given a sword. You must slay your opponent. And then you'll get 80,000 years.
I like sword interval. I think it sounds fun.
I'm gonna stick with the red giant.
You like that one better?
I favor that one.
All right. Yeah. Let me give you another one then.
Because I don't like winter, so that's why I like the sun one.
Oh, well.
Drop another.
Time Wave Zero.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, it has a good name.
That sounds like an album.
This one, I think we could sell this one.
Yeah.
It's got a catchy name.
Yeah.
You know, it's easy to remember. Time Wave Zero.
Mm-hmm.
It's also mysterious.
Yeah.
It makes you want to investigate further.
Yeah.
So Time Wave Zero calculates the ebb and flow of novelty being in quotes. Now what novelty is, it's defined as an increase over time of the universe's interconnectedness of organized complexity. So a guy named Terrence,
I like the sun scenario.
Hold on, we're getting there. A guy named Terrence McKenna, he developed this theory. He says that the universe, or said, because he's not alive anymore, universe has a teleological attractor. At the end of time, it will eventually reach a singularity of infinite complexity. And this will happen this year, 2012, at which point anything and everything imaginable will occur simultaneously.
Really?
Everything imaginable will happen at once. Everything. All of it. I should point out that he was on mushrooms and DMT while he developed this theory. But he developed a computer program this computer program generated waveforms. Okay. And his whole thing was like, he assumed or theorized that major events had recursive or reflective events somewhere else in time.
Oh, okay. So you sort of kind of like a curve.
Yeah.
Like a bell curve.
So he'd look at these waveforms where something major happened that was a sort of world changing event. Mm-hmm. So the one he picked and to found this on, to found the theory on, was Hiroshima, the bomb dropping. And what lines up on that waveform. So if you start at Hiroshima, you're going to dip down into a trough, right? And then you come back up to a peak. And at that peak, if I read this correctly, is the year 2012. Now his original theory, said that it was November 2012, but then he found out about the Mayan calendar and revised to match up with that.
Oh, weak.
But it's a cool theory.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I like the idea.
Anything
of being like mirrored
and everything imaginable will occur
all at once. At the same time.
Just think about that for a second. Let's all think about it.
Let's have a moment here.
Why does the sun go on shining? Why does the sea rush to shore? Don't they?
So my favorite one, I want to hear my favorite
one.
So there's a lot I didn't talk about, but this is my favorite. These are of the ones I wrote down. Singularity.
Singularity.
Have you heard of singularity?
No, I don't think so.
You may have, and you just don't know it by this term. So, I think it has something to do with Moore's law. Okay. Which I think, and I'm guessing based on what I read, I didn't look up the definition of Moore's law. So everyone's going to get mad when I get this wrong. I'm winging it. Moore's law, I think, is that essentially computing power increases like exponentially.
Okay.
So it increases faster and faster, and you know, computers get better and better over time. So when, you know, from 1980 to 1990, computers got so much better, right?
Mm.
Well, that time period, that amount of I don't know how to phrase this, the amount of increase in computing power in that time period, to do that again takes less time as you go. So, you know, to keep it simple, in 5 years time, from 1990 to 1995, we do that same amount of increase
in
computing power. And then from 95 to 97, that same, you know what I mean? So exactly.
Sure.
So you're getting more faster.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's Moore's law. We could look it up.
Okay.
and if I get it wrong, we'll admit it, but
somebody's,
let's assume I'm
right
about
now.
That.
Your mom is yelling at you.
Yeah.
Right now.
Or my brother.
Or your,
or Adam. He likes to yell at us too.
Oh yeah.
But, so because of that, there are a few scientists or physicists or whatever, I don't know what kind of scientists they are, but they're scientists, and they think that this will eventually lead to, at some point in the near future, computers and computing power surpassing the abilities of humans, right? So, essentially, I think I wrote this down. It is the point at which greater than human intelligence emerges through technological means resulting in, and this is what I like the best, explosive super intelligence.
Ooh, explosive.
So basically, what they're saying is, like, we make computers, right? We make technology, and we make it pretty smart. And we're doing, like, we're making it smarter every day. Mm-hmm. Eventually, the computer will become so smart that it will be smarter than us, and then it will make smarter computers than it, or it will just make itself smarter.
Right.
So eventually, these supercomputers, these super intelligent entities, will surpass us, and we have no conception of what that will mean. It could be, you know, fine. It could be all right. It could be, like,
rad.
Like, they're just really awesome and smart, and, you know, make the world a better place. It could be really bad for us. They may see us as, you know, a big problem with the world. But nobody,
which doesn't seem like too much of a stretch.
Yeah. But yeah, so the cool thing about this theory is people who ascribe to it are sure it's going to happen. They're sure it's going to happen soon because of the rate at which we're, you know, getting better at making computers smart. And that once it happens, all bets are off. Like, we don't know what's going to happen after that.
So why do they call it singularity?
I don't know where that term, the term comes from. A guy, I saw his name. It's like, I think it has a V in it.
Dr. V.
But the first guy that proposed this just gave it that name, I guess. Huh. And then people just, you know, they liked it.
They were like, hey, did you hear what V dropped the other day? Singularity. It's catching on.
But that's my favorite.
Really?
Yeah.
You like, why? What is it that seems appealing about it?
Well, I'm not saying it's appealing.
No, okay.
I'm just saying it's really fascinating.
Oh, okay.
I think that's, you know, and it seems, what's the word I'm looking for? Possible. Seems like that could happen.
Yeah. I mean, I think technology will only get to that point if I think it will take a human desire to see that happen before it happens.
Like, I disagree with you.
But
go on.
I think it would require a human pursuing the goal of creating an intelligence.
Which is happening. That's an ongoing project for a lot of science-y people, man. The Turing test, that's where you try to it's where you create a artificial intelligence that can interact with a human, and the human doesn't realize that they're talking to artificial intelligence.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
That happens, like, yearly. There's a contest, I think. Hmm. But the reason, to me, it's possible, regardless of what humans want, whether they want that or not, is that because we're continually making things, these computers, smarter, eventually we won't have any say in it. Like, a computer will get smart enough that it won't need a human to do what it needs to do.
Hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm saying.
But we can always pull the plug, though.
Oh, we can always pull the plug. Is that what you think?
Yeah.
Let me introduce you to a little thing called the internet. Distributed intelligence.
Oh.
A network of servers. The cloud. We got no control over it.
Oh.
What's it called?
Skynet.
Skynet.
Yeah. See, that's why I like this one, the singularity.
Yeah.
Because it's the closest to Skynet.
Sort of like Skynet, yeah.
Yeah.
So those are kind of all doomsdays or world-ending events where it's not so much like that everybody gets wiped out.
Mm-hmm.
It's more of like life as
an
we know
altering
it.
Yeah. Of what we know.
Yeah.
As exactly. Life. So when did the zombies come in?
That's a good question. That's a big one.
What's the zombie theorem?
Man, there's a lot of, those are plenty of doomsday theories around zombies.
Yeah. When there's no more room in hell, the dead will walk the earth.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's the whole, you know, of the dead series of movies that propose that those end times.
I would consider that an altering of life.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know? And potentially the end of the human race.
Yeah. Because eventually if you wipe out enough of them, then...
The humans?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the zombies don't stop.
Right. They're just going to keep coming.
Yeah.
So eventually humans are going to die out.
Yep. It'll be just zombies hanging out.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's definitely, especially nowadays, a very popular one.
I mean, I guess the only problem with that theory would be the lack of zombies. But
the lack of zombies.
Right. Well, we don't have zombies right now, so right. It's kind of hard to...
Well, yeah. But that's... I mean, that's like a lot of other theories.
That's true. Yeah, right? we don't have artificial intelligence.
Yeah, yet. Yeah.
Yet. Yeah. Yet. What if... Oh, maybe... Oh, I just had a great thought.
Uh-oh.
So what if the zombies and the artificial intelligence come about at the same time?
Do they team up?
Yeah, they team up. They start working together.
That happens
maybe
all at
that's
once.
What... What's his face? Mr. Shroom, Dr. Mushroom,
Time Wave
meant
Zero?
By like
that's
all things
event.
Happening at once.
Okay, so that means all three of those things are correct. Time
right.
Wave Zero, Singularity, and Zombie Apocalypse.
Right, and the sun.
All
and the sun
we're gonna
gets
do that
warmer.
One too.
Yeah, all things possible.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Zombie, I thought you were just gonna proposing. Come at us from all fronts, man. It's gonna be like when like the Penguin and the Joker, like when they all would like team up on that old
yeah,
Batman show,
yeah.
And they'd all just hang out in that one room yep. And plot.
in the movie they all hung out in that submarine. Right? Mm-hmm. It was the Riddler, mm-hmm. Catwoman, the Penguin, and the Joker.
Yeah.
And they just hung
and
out.
The Riddler. Did you say the Riddler?
Yeah, yeah.
The Riddler was in that way, yeah.
Yeah.
Commodore Schmidlap is my name.
Wow. I thought you were
so
saying...
So which one is like the Joker? Is he the zombie? And,
oh, okay, well...
Catwoman would be...
No, hold on now. Why is the Joker the zombie? That doesn't make a whole lot of sense. No. I think maybe the Penguin is, because he kind of makes a grunty noise.
Okay, so the
zombie
Penguin is
and
the
he
zombie.
Moves, he waddles, you know?
Sure, all right. Technology, would that be Catwoman? She's like the cunning...
Yeah,
sort
yeah,
of,
clever and cunning, yeah. I'm trying to decide whether Time Wave Zero is the Riddler or if it's... The Joker, because basically, which one would you assume is on mushrooms? And in that show,
well,
in that movie,
they're both. Actually, I think the Riddler's a little more maniacal.
Yeah,
Frank Gorshin is.
Oh yeah,
is much more
that
maniacal
depiction
than,
of Riddler seems much crazier.
And I also like the idea, like he's the Riddler. He's a puzzle.
Yeah,
time
yeah,
wave
yeah,
zero.
Yeah, time
it's
wave
beyond
zero.
Our comprehension.
Yeah.
So
and then so wait,
the Joker's just
the
nuts.
Sun?
So he's like the sun getting hotter. You know.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Sure.
There was the famous, the infamous coming Armageddon that didn't happen, but that we lived through the fear of.
Yeah, what, was that the millennium, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Y2K.
Why
was anybody worried? I wasn't.
You weren't?
No.
Not even the slightest?
Not at all.
You weren't concerned about, like... something happening?
No.
I was a little bit worried that like the drive-through box wouldn't work at Burger King or something, you know? Cuz that's like I figured okay, you know, every like major bank or, you know, all those places, they're backing this stuff
yeah,
up.
Yeah.
They've got this. They've got the money
well,
they can do it. But I was worried like, you know, little things would not work.
Explain why it was why were people worried?
Okay, yeah. So the concern was that and it's man, it's so weird like it, considering how huge a deal this was,
yeah.
Like how we've like quickly just forgotten about this.
Oh, yeah.
You know? But so all like a lot of computer technology that was developed throughout the 20th century was designed with a finite time frame in mind.
Yeah, an eternal clock.
Right. And it only went so high as the year 1999.
Well, right? It was more that the amount, the number of digits ascribed to the year in that clock was just the last two.
Oh, okay, right.
So once we got to 99, it was going to tick over back to 00.
Right.
And so people were worried that technologists were legitimately concerned that this would kind of screw things up. Right. In the technology, like all these clocks would reset, and what would that mean, you know?
And shoot lasers at everyone.
But then, like, it became this thing of, like, oh, cars are going to shut down in the streets, the we're going to lose all power, and the world is going to stop.
Yeah.
Which was absurd. I mean, this is the thing.
People made fun of that idea, too. Like, everybody was sort of kind of, not everybody, but there was most people were kind of joking about it.
But there was a definite contingent of people who were like stocking up.
Oh yeah.
Like getting water and gas and keeping it in their basement and getting food stockpiled.
Lots of beans.
Yeah. And it was just
I'm sure my parents had like a whole bunch of beans and stuff in the in their shed or
it was an incredible basement. Yeah. It was I think also people were also just worried about the significance of it being the new millennium.
Oh yeah. Which, like, is, I mean,
weren't there, I think there may have been some theories that were like, oh, the world's going to end in the year 2000.
Well, people, that's the thing with sort of any kind of like apocalyptic prophecy.
There's always a number.
People like, there's these very vague predictions of things, and people sort of will find a way. They'll find some minute coincidental link between the two, and they'll try to wrap the prophecy around. Whatever. I'm pretty sure there was some sort of Nostradamus
link.
Yeah, prediction that people were pointing to and being like, look, he said 2,000 years. And then,
look, he said that when a bird flies through the air and during a red sky, that the world's going to end. And in 2000,
there's going to be birds.
There's going to be all these birds. And I heard that there's a weather event happening when the sky will look red.
It was stuff like that. I mean, that's the thing with Nostradamus would make these really vague, weird, easily interpretable
predictions. You could apply them to multitudes of things.
And what I love is that of all the things that people are like, see, he got that right. Like, there's so many things he didn't get right.
Yeah, right. Yeah, his average is like maybe like 5% accuracy. Yeah.
But yeah, so people were on the one hand scared of technology, and on the other hand scared of like this, the fact that we were, changing numbers to the 2000s.
I think it was more like the people who were like really concerned about end of world scenarios were just sort of like saying, well, like, look, somebody so-and-so predicted it, and now there's all this stuff about the computers and the clocks.
Yeah.
So
they all
clearly
that's up.
Just – it just sort of accelerated the crazy.
It's like the 2012 stuff now. So people are like, look, the Mayans predicted it, and the planets are all supposed to align.
Right, yeah.
They do that every year, by the way, apparently. And they're like, oh, but there's this solar – the sun is having these crazy solar events and everything I read is then debunked by, scientists or whatever.
Like real people.
Yeah. There's the planet. Have you heard the planet Nibiru? Or like, apparently that's going to appear out of nowhere and crash into the Earth. Just a planet. That's my favorite.
It's going
one.
On a joyride.
A planet's going to hit us. We won't see
it. We're in the crosswalk.
We're going to see it to the last second. You're just going about your business and suddenly there's a planet. Just crashes into the Earth.
Oh, sorry, didn't see you orbiting there.
So that's awesome. Well, that's wonder if I didn't really look into it, but I wonder if like the theory is that Nibiru or whatever the hell it's called is currently orbiting and has been. We just never seen it.
Oh,
maybe like we're on the same path or something.
Right.
And now it's finally we're gonna meet.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. I made that up. I hope
that's
what
it
is. That's
a good theory.
Wouldn't that be cool?
Yeah.
What's
maybe we can like give like a high five to the new beer.
Yeah, everybody. As they pass by
as
each
our
other.
By.
There they are. I hope that the Nibirians are just us.
Right.
You know,
right.
Like it's an alternate Earth and
yeah.
We all have like mustaches or
counterparts.
Something.
Counterparts. Yeah.
And does everybody hands up, high five.
Right,
high five your counterpart. Woo-hoo! Everybody's really excited.
And then
that
it's
would
like
be
very anticlimactic after we
would
like,
it? No, well. I think it would be a huge moral, like, we'd all feel great after that.
Yeah,
we
probably
you think?
Would. Yeah, we'd all
like,
feel unified.
If there was a coordinated high five across two planets, you know,
yeah.
Rather than an Armageddon,
right?
We'd be.
Oh, yeah.
I'd be excited for days afterward.
But what about the scenario wherein not everyone... You know, because the two planets will only close enough for a high
You'd
five
really
at one geographic point.
Everybody
so.
Would be ready, right?
Right.
But or maybe the scientists could predict where it's going to happen.
Right. And so then, everybody like, could converge
yeah.
on it. It'd be like Woodstock. But
yeah. It'd be bands playing.
R.E.M.
And on both planets. And as they pass
oh,
by,
yeah, yeah.
You get it in stereo.
Yeah.
High five. Oh, man.
That's good.
I'm excited about that.
Yeah,
now
bring it on. I'm ready for it. Come on, Mayans. Get
but
your,
yeah, people
get your
hear
thing
about one thing, and then they start to ascribe other things to that. So the Mayans, people are like, oh, the Mayans predicted it. So
yeah.
All these other things are pointing to the apocalypse. And it's just kind of silly a lot
yeah.
of the time. I also like that people ascribe things to dates, like as if natural events or, you know, like they're going to adhere to the calendar we've
that
developed.
We made, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like like nature's like, oh, it's the year 2000? Let's do something big.
Yeah. Let's make this a memorable one. Everybody's counting on us. Yeah. Well, or even that, like, that our calendar actually means anything.
Right.
Because,
it's
I mean, we just sort of, like, made it up.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it, yeah. it's not even.
I love it.
Even the stuff that we attribute to that calendar is sort of questionable. You know, people don't really know for sure, like, what day was, you know, which in the year 00.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's
well,
like so.
Plus, I mean, to me, the only thing that is substantial or that, you know, has real bearing on the way we count time is, you know, daytime and nighttime. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then and moving around the sun, like these two things you can measure. Right. So you can give actual numbers. The numbers themselves are arbitrary. We made those up.
Right.
Like just the concept of numbers, but that time passing is measurable.
Sure.
But to, like, ascribe, like, the years, like, we just, you know, we picked a place to start with zero.
Right.
We could have moved it anywhere.
But there, yeah.
That zero
totally
can live
fluid
anywhere.
Point, yeah.
We could decide now. Like, if everyone agreed, let's start over and let's make it zero. So they could have done that, right? Like,
right.
When everyone's worried about, well, everyone's worried about 2012 now, let's just reset.
Yeah.
And then
just
we'll
say, like,
we'll have another.
It's like the odometer.
Years.
It's like, okay, well, we just finished this trip. Now we're home. Let's hit the button, and now we're ready to go again.
We've got another 2012 years.
Let's go to Disney World. Yeah.
Just keep doing it.
Just keep resetting it. Yeah.
Oh man, what about literature? Literature and fiction and all those. What are some good doomsday stuff?
Oh, I see. That's where it's like it's really. That's where doomsday, I think, really like. Proves its merit because it gives you a whole it's a good starting point, a very fertile background for a lot of stories and
totally
and like I mean I guess the oldest one, like the original, like holy crap end of world thing would probably be like in the Bible, I guess.
Armageddon,
yeah, like the
rapture,
the Book of Revelation. Yeah,
I've never read it.
It's crazy.
But
it might have been written by somebody on mushrooms. Yeah. It might have been that guy. Dr. Vern Vink or whatever his name was.
No, that's Vern Ving is the singularity guy.
Oh, okay, okay, okay.
The Terrence McKenna.
Okay, yeah. Maybe he wrote the Book of Revelation. Yeah. I don't know. It's crazy though. Well, I mean, and it's not like it's not explicitly about like, you know, it's written in such a metaphorical and lyrical way that it's not, you can't really like say that it's about the end of one thing and the beginning of another or anything like that, because it could be interpreted as so many different things.
The whole idea is that the pious and those who are devout are taken up to heaven, right?
Yes.
And the rest of the human race is left for hell on earth.
Sort of.
Isn't that the idea?
Well, that's one interpretation of it.
That's the only one interpretation.
No, yeah, it could mean a lot of different things. Hey. It could mean that those pious individuals get to hang out
a little bit longer
at a spa.
Ooh.
And everybody else is going to be they're going to a high rise.
Well, that's not so bad.
It's not really so bad, you know. Now, granted, they can't go above like the third floor of the high rise. But I mean, it's just so you know, nebulous. The terms and the imagery that isn't included in there is so fluid and malleable that you could really interpret it so many different ways.
Much like any predictive text like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Well, especially in something that was written like when our language was completely different.
Yeah.
Like,
and the context is completely different.
Yeah, right. It's not like somebody even if somebody were like to be seized by a prophetic vision today, you know, he or she would write in a completely different way than the person who, you know, and it probably wasn't even written initially. There's probably just some story spoken that somebody's, you know, spouting out. And eventually somebody picked up a pen and was like, hey, remember that thing that one crazy dude talked about? Let's write that down. Cause that was wild, man.
He said that God told him this was happening.
Right.
So he
probably
put it down.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like there's, people. I mean, so when that stuff was written, you know, it was people who read it would have had a totally different frame of reference as well to what those events meant, you know?
Yeah.
So like when we interpret it today and we ascribe to it all the things that, you know, are part of our lives and, you know, are contextualized to us, it doesn't mean, it's certainly not going to mean the same thing. And we're going to misinterpret a lot of stuff. Not to mention, like you said, the language was different.
Yeah. They had there's the talk about like I feel like there's some line in there about like horns or trumpets or something that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, they didn't even have trumpets, you know?
That's cool. I like
the sound. I love trumpets. Yeah. I mean, I like the idea that like Chet Baker is out there like, you know, playing at the end of the world.
You mean like a
Yeah. but I mean,
oh,
yeah.
Oh God, it's the end time.
It's like the bugler that you know, like at the
wait, is it?
See, I was thinking it would be like the guy that plays in the morning, like on an army
Reveille?
Base.
Is that Reveille?
I don't know.
Or is that the one I just did?
No, that was
is
Taps.
Wait.
Yeah. Everybody out of your bunks. It's the end of the world.
That's great. It starts with an earthquake. Birds and snakes and aeroplane. Lenny Bruce is not afraid. I have a hurricane. Listen to yourself. Churn world. Serve its own needs. Dummy, serve your own needs. Feed it up an ox. Speak front. No strength. The ladder starts to clatter with fear. Fight down. High choir and a fire representing seven games in a government for hire and a combat site. Left to us are coming in a hurry with the furies breathing down your neck. Team, my team, reporters, babble, Trump, Tether, Croft. Look at that. No plane. Fine. Then. Uh-oh. Overflow. Population comment book. What it'll do. Save yourself. Serve yourself. World. Serve its own needs. Listen to your heart. Lead dummy with the rapture and the reverend and the right. Patriotic slam, bite, bright, my feeling, pretty sight. It's the end of the world.
like sci-fi that was written in the wake of
nuclear
the atomic weapon. Yep. Yeah, was all sort of like it was almost never like a hero or it was almost never like a maybe kind of scenario. It was like, this is definitely wiping out everything.
Yeah.
You know, or, you know, except for this one band of people.
Right. Bomb shelters.
Yeah. On the beach. That's a good one. Where like it's, it takes place on, I think it's in Australia.
Uh-huh.
And it's like this group of survivors who lived through the actual exchange of, you know, bombs and stuff.
Right.
But they're standing on a beach or they're living on a beach and they know, based on like the tides and the way that weather is traveling, that they know that this cloud of nuclear radiation is eventually going to reach them, and so it's all about them, you know, confronting that. Or I Am Legend, which is I think there are different interpretations of that storyline, but like in the original one, I think it's there was a there was eventually like some sort of nuclear exchange,
right?
And that had instead of it didn't necessarily wipe everybody out, but it took out a good chunk of people, and then the people who were left behind were kind of mutated as a result. There's the Time Machine, H.G. Wells,
which was a cool
is a great one.
Right?
Yeah, you don't really know. I think I'm not sure about the novel. In the movie that they made that was adapted from in the 50s or whatever, that you sort of see
the movie
very
they
quickly
made in the 50s.
Yeah.
Okay.
As the lead guy is sort of traveling rapidly through time, you kind of see a hint of some sort of like
event.
Yeah. That is probably a nuclear based or whatever, but there's a complete like wipeout of society as he understands it.
Yeah.
And then it sort of resets with the new
one. Right. So like when he goes far enough, it's savages again. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like the one that I really like, is, a book and a movie, Children of Men. And in that story, the scenario, the premise is that women at a certain point stop, are no longer able to give birth. Mm. All women can no longer give birth. So, like, essentially the last, you know, kids that were born, those are the last humans that are going to live.
Right.
And I think it's set like 20 years after, you know, this happens.
Mm-hmm.
So, people are just, you know, the world's going to end. The human race is going to end.
Right. Eventually it's
going
to die
out. You know, and it's a really, really interesting sort of, premise, because all of the, things and all of the structures in society that were built for children are no longer necessary. So
you don't need daycare when
everybody's
it's
20. Really, yeah. And like they talk about how some, like there's this market for dolls, like that are very realistic that are like babies.
Oh yeah.
And so people walk around with these fake babies just to feel like they have a kid. It's really fascinating.
You know, there are actually those. There's something like that that actually exists. I heard somebody recently talking about like these high end fake children dolls. I know it's really freaky. I think those people have been chewing mushrooms.
It's one instance where I preferred the movie to the book.
Okay.
The book. I mean, they're you know, they both have the same premise, but they go in kind of different directions with it.
Mm-hmm.
And the movie felt a bit. The book kind of, for me, got a little too heady, you know, like a little too philosophical.
Yeah.
And, the movie kept it more in practical terms, I think. Sort of more looked at what is society, what happens to society when this occurs.
Mm-hmm.
And less about sort of like in the heads of the characters and anyway, but it's good stuff.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Yeah. There've been, there have been a lot of recent movies that were sort of global in scale, I think, that kind of talk about that.
Yeah.
Like, and that's another good word. You know, I think it's sort of set in like one area, right?
Children of Men?
Children of Men,
isn't it? No, global.
Is it? Okay.
I mean, the story is
set in England.
The story is set
in one place.
Yeah, it's
right.
In England.
Okay, but it's a global thing.
Yeah.
I find that way more intriguing than the stories or novels or movies that try to do like a worldview,
yeah,
you know, where you have like characters in different places, showing you, like, here's what it's like in Russia, and here's what it's like in LA, right, or whatever. I find that kind of not quite nearly as engaging as when you have just a very small cast of characters, and like what's really going on with them. In fact, like most of my favorite end of the world scenario movies usually only have like one or two people, three people in them.
Interesting.
Or, you know, maybe five.
I'm trying to think of another end of world movie. I mean, there's lots of them.
Yeah, there's tons. And like, I'm the only ones that are coming to mind are like sort of older or like
zombie flicks.
There's a lot of good, yeah, a lot of good zombie stuff. There's a great movie called, it's actually a terrible movie, but I love it, called The Last Woman on Earth.
Okay.
And it's like, it was like a Roger Corman movie back in the 60s.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, these people are all snorkeling when the bomb wipes out everybody.
They're safe underwater?
I think that's what it was. They were like underwater, so excellent. They were safe. And so then they come up and then everybody's gone. Oh, another one, similar, very similar, but not at all, is Night of the Comet. Have you ever seen that?
No.
Oh, God, it's so good. It's 1986, I think.
Uh-huh.
And it's like these two sisters, I think, or best friends. They are, one of them, I forget how it is. I guess it's like there's a comet that everybody's expecting to pass by the Earth. And so people are all out in the streets, you know, cheering and watching this comet. Well, all of those people end up turning to like dust or something.
Whoa.
When the comet goes by. And only people who were protected by lead are still around afterwards.
That's awesome.
It's really cool. And it's
turned to dust.
Yeah, they turn to this like pink powder, I think, kind of like in that Batman thing where he dehydrates all of the
dehydrate.
But like that one is a great, you know, because that one sort of it played up the initial like fun element, like, you know, because there's always that kernel in those stories, like, hey, we've got this whole planet to ourselves now
because
it's the end of the world. I don't think another good one, another big one.
The difficulty is in movies and in fiction, I guess. Often it's more of dystopian, than it is actual world ending. Because usually the world ending event is averted in some way. Armageddon, the Michael Bay classic, where Bruce Willis and his crew of roughnecks become take a crash
like
course.
Like Ben Affleck, the roughest of the rough.
They take a crash course in spaceman like
drilling
class.
Or
Well, no, they're
oh,
already
that's right.
Drilling.
They were all like riggers.
They work on an oil rig.
Yeah,
and because they have the know-how of drilling, they're sent to this asteroid. Right?
Yeah. And they're gonna
blow
it
drop
into
a bomb
pieces
in the middle. Because you gotta put it, if they try to hit it, you know, just on the surface, it'll just do a little pockmark and, you know, no damage done. But if they drill a hole to the center and then drop it in there, problem solved.
All good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
so that world ending event was averted.
Yeah.
Spoiler.
But not without the loss of Bruce Willis.
Ooh, yeah. I know.
It's always a sacrificial lamb in those movies.
What are you going to do?
Do you remember there was the one that came out the same year?
Deep Impact. I didn't see it.
It's terrible. I mean, they both are, but that one might even be worse than Armageddon, which is hard to imagine. But I just remember there's a great scene. I think it was supposed to be, here's another spoiler, but this comes in later on in the movie. It was supposed to be very moving, wherein Tia Leone's character, like, She spends the whole movie like sort of running from the inevitable, like, this is the end of the world thing or whatever. And then finally at the end, she sort of accepts, you know, I think she gets to stay with her dad. But anyway, there's this great scene where she's just sort of standing on the beach waiting for this gigantic tidal wave to come and like get her. And for some reason, I thought it was the most hysterical like concept that she's just sitting there on the beach watching, and, you know, this giant wave, like ridiculously cartoonishly huge wave is coming at her.
Does it get her?
Yeah, of course it gets her.
Thought maybe like Superman swooped in or something.
No, yeah, and then he like turned
the world backwards.
He spun it back around. Yeah, reverse time.
2012 was a movie. I didn't see it.
Oh yeah, it was, wasn't it?
I never saw it though.
Yeah, and that was one where, like, everything goes wrong.
Yeah, that had big tidal waves in it.
Yeah, and glaciers and stuff. Yeah. Stuff. Waterworld? I guess that's sort of a...
That's sort of... There was a world. Yeah. I mean, so again, like...
That's post-apocalyptic.
You know, where do you draw the line? You know, that falls under the life as we know it changes, right? So Waterworld, the whole Earth is pretty much covered in water.
Yeah.
And, Kevin Costner grows gills.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, he had gills. I can't remember how he got them, but... Or if he was supposed to be, like, the first in a series of evolutionary adjustments to the...
right.
Which, again, is great, like...
Yeah. there's another really... I don't know if good is the right word. A really fascinating Doomsday event is Cthulhu.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
The H.P. Lovecraft short story, right? Mm-hmm. Is it called Call of Cthulhu?
I think the original one is, yeah.
Right?
Call of Cthulhu.
And it's the most weird one. It's the and like the creepiest one, where like Cthulhu being this, you know, massive like god, right?
Essentially, yeah, a lot of his stories, a lot of Lovecraft stuff was all based around the concept that there was or is this
sleeping.
There's all of these gods that have been around for, you know, so much longer than humanity.
Yeah,
this is basically like they just kind of prowl around through different dimensions and planets and stuff like that. And there's nothing that we can do about it.
And Cthulhu's like asleep, essentially, isn't he?
Yeah.
And eventually... you know, I've never actually read it. I've always read stuff about it.
It's dense.
Called Cthulhu. I've tried to read it, and it's actually really kind of trying to read.
All of his stuff is pretty rough.
But, the idea is he essentially, Cthulhu wakes up, right?
Yeah.
And he's pretty angry because he's just like a jerk, right? And essentially everyone in the world goes crazy, right?
Yeah, because... Our minds can't comprehend.
Right. You see things from these other dimensions or whatever, and your mind cannot understand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is pretty, pretty badass.
Oh, man. It's scary.
Yeah, it's creepy.
But, Cthulhu. He's a big squid guy.
Big squid guy.
Yeah, he's got, like, squid mouth.
Yeah.
Tentacles.
Medusa mouth.
Yeah, Medusa mouth. Big wings.
Where are you going, Medusa mouth? Gonna go destroy the world?
Is the poem The Kraken by Tennyson, I think is, I don't know if, did Lovecraft draw inspiration from that?
Oh, maybe.
Because it essentially, like...
It's a beast from the sea.
And it wakes up. Like, it the poem ends with it waking up and, like, it's basically spells doom for...
Yeah.
Humankind or something like that.
Everybody.
It's a good poem too.
Good one. Good one, Tennyson.
That's what Cthulhu said. Oh, man. What now?
That's what Cthulhu said.
He said, good one, Tennyson. Hey, man. That's a good one, Tennyson.
He has, you know, water mouth.
Yeah, sure.
Water mouth and Medusa.
Water mouth.
Because he's born out of the sea.
Right.
He wakes up and he comes out of the ocean.
What did they got? A lot of humans.
We got a hot crustacean band. Oh, man. They should put Cthulhu in that movie. That would have been a great Easter egg. Like Sebastian just trips on a tentacle.
Right.
And you see this Cthulhu. He almost wakes up. Oh, man.
Yeah, good stuff.
Can you think of a doomsday event that has not yet been created? Yeah, like what's something that you could see happening?
That's a good question.
Well, remember our proposal with the planet Nibiru?
Yeah.
The high five.
The high five.
We miss.
Oh, no. And we never have a chance. Yeah.
But so we just... People are so depressed.
that we missed the high five, and that was the only chance. But it was just like mass suicide.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone's so, and on both planets, everyone's so bummed out that we didn't nail the high five.
Yeah.
They just, that's it.
That's it?
Yeah.
That's a bummer.
It is.
That's a really good.
I think we'll do it, though. I think we'll nail it.
You think we'll get it?
Yeah. We're going to get that high five. People are going to practice.
We're going to practice. Yeah. We're going to build, like, satellites.
So they'll pass over.
Just have, yeah, like, a giant hand.
Exactly. We can do it.
I like that.
Yeah.
Good on us.
Yeah.
All right. We better go practice some high fives.
Okay. Let's put this in the archive right now.